Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Welcome back to the Short Coat Podcast. I'm Dave Etler. This week, a bit of a departure from our usual format. M2 Eric Wilson files a report on how medicine and the humanities, and specifically writing, are interacting with each other in ways that not long ago would have seemed unlikely. If you're a pre-med, a medical student, or a doc yourself, and you've been trying to reconcile a love for writing and art with a love for medicine and science, Eric's report will give you some comfort.
Physicians have been writing for as long as the concept of the physician has existed. Early doctors were multi-talented. Nicolaus Copernicus is best known for his contributions to astronomy. Anton Chekhov is considered one of the greatest short story writers, and William Carlos Williams is remembered for his excellence in poetry. Over the decades, the field of medicine has grown exponentially, and one would be inclined to think that this has caused fewer and fewer doctors to pursue other interests such as writing. One look at bestseller lists dispels this myth, as writers such as Atul Gawande and Abraham Verghese have achieved both popular appeal and critical acclaim. This is only the tip of the iceberg. There's a vibrant culture of healthcare professionals exploring the intersections of the humanities and medicine in every genre of art. They use the humanities to reflect on their own experiences, to improve their understanding of the patient experience, or simply to find a creative outlet. One constant throughout this culture is the understanding that there is great value in the humanities, even in a science-focused profession such as medicine. In this episode, I will be talking with a medical student and two physicians to discover why they find the time to incorporate writing and the humanities into their lives. The people I spoke with are passionate about the humanities, but that passion has to come from somewhere. A common thread through each story was that of personal interest eventually merging with professional life. Rachel Hammer, a third-year medical student at the Mayo School of Medicine, found her inspiration began at a very young age when her parents entertained guests.
I would visit with them for a little while, and then I would leave while they were talking or whatever, and I would go write short stories, which I would also illustrate with pictures of the characters, and then as everyone was getting ready to leave, I would pass out the stories I had written for the guests. And things like this follow you. You know, I continued to do that through college. My bachelor's degree is in biochemistry, but I did an honors project in writing short creative essays about chemistry molecules and different, you know, little anecdotes, vignettes in the style of Lewis Thomas about, you know, organisms and microbes. So weird.
Similarly, writing has always been something that Dr. Serena Fox, an intensive care physician at Mount Sinai Beth Israel Health Center, has used to explain her world.
For me, my way of explaining the world around me has always been through language and specifically poetry.
Unlike Fox and Hammer, Dr. Louise Aronson, a geriatrician at UCSF, came to writing later in life after having already begun her career as a physician.
My second career is as a writer, which initially started as sort of just a hobby, really. And I wanted to learn how to write in a literary way. But medicine is so full of incredible stories. I ended up writing my first book, A History of the Present Illness, about, you know, stories about both doctors and patients to try and represent who we are and what's going on in healthcare today.
Inspiration is key to pursuing the things you love, but the humanities can take on a much larger role in medicine if they're shown to have some practical benefit. Dr. Aronson believes that the stories play a strong role in working with geriatric patients.
If you or I break a leg, we can have, you know, a cast put on, you hand us some crutches, and you send us out the door, and we'll be fine. But that's not necessarily the case for an older person. We need to know a lot more about their social situation, their functional situation, everything else. Some people aren't necessarily interested in that. They'd rather think about the liver or about tuberculosis. But I think what drew me to medicine and then what drew me to geriatrics was the people. So part of my draw to geriatrics was, and not just that they have more story, which they do having lived longer, but that the story matters even more.
Another area that Dr. Aronson feels physicians can use writing is in communicating with the public and influencing health policy.
We've usually thought of communication in medicine as provider-patient or as writing research articles. And I think in the 21st century, we need to be writing op-eds, we need to be writing perspectives pieces, we need to be blogging and tweeting and expressing ourselves in all kinds of other ways if we're really going to influence health and healthcare.
Dr. Fox thinks that the humanities can also address needs in medicine, but in a way that's different from the usual language.
We're learning a very specific language when we're trained to be doctors. And that language has to do with conveying very accurately the science and physiology of what we need to know and what our colleagues need to know. But in order to actually convey an in-depth emotional knowledge, we need a different kind of language.
Something that writing can give is a way to address the human needs that are key to understanding your patients and their families and what they're going through.
In medicine, you're always dealing with people. A great many of my patients, if I'm doing my job well, they're nicely sedated and hopefully will have very little memory of being in the ICU. But their families go through every up and down that you can imagine. You know, if you're an anesthesiologist, you're still talking to a patient pre-op, I hope, and their families. The more you know about human nature, the better a human you are and the better a doctor you are. I don't think you can separate the two.
She's talking about empathy. It's something that we as trainees and physicians all know we need to have. And from her perspective, the humanities is a way to get there.
I also think that we live in very diverse cultures right now. Your teams are diverse as well as your patient body. And the more that you can understand about other cultures, the better a physician you're going to be.
It's clear that there are convincing arguments for the benefits of the humanities, but introducing humanities education into a packed medical school curriculum is a challenge. In an era of rapidly expanding scientific knowledge, each piece of a curriculum is scrutinized, determining what will bring the highest yield to future doctors. So it's a fair question. Does something like the humanities need to be justified as part of a medical curriculum? Both Dr. Fox and Rachel Hammer have pretty strong opinions.
Off the cuff, my immediate answer to that is no.
Absolutely not.
But Dr. Fox sees the value and necessity in trying to objectively assess the outcomes of the humanities.
However, I'm going to qualify that and say yes in the sense that looking at it that way can yield some pretty interesting results. And in order to convince an administration or a teaching body that has very many other concerns, you may have to do that. I don't know that we have developed the right way to do that yet.
Dr. Aronson agrees and acknowledges that using the humanities in a medical curriculum presents something that medical schools find hard to deal with, a moving target.
What constitutes an objective and how you assess that may need to vary. You know, you're not going to give a multiple choice test necessarily on someone's writing or on their analysis of something the way you might on whether they know the parts of the human arm, for example. So I think the standard is fine, and where we have struggled in medicine is more moving beyond the methods we've traditionally used to assess learners and even practicing professionals.
Rachel also feels that the usual tools we use to assess curricula aren't necessarily appropriate.
I think that it's using the wrong measuring stick. The problem with trying to measure the outcomes of humanities is that humanities is not something that is easily measured, either what the humanities are, what their purpose is, and their effect on human beings.
The humanities can serve another role, however, and that is acting as a catalyst for different ways of thinking.
I did see something really interesting today in the critical care literature. They just published a study about premature infants.
Dr. Fox is referring to an article that came out in the March 2014 edition of the journal Pediatrics.
They ate better when they were played pre-recorded lullabies by their mothers. They were reinforced with this lullaby when they sucked properly and ate properly, and their nutrition was better than the group of preemies that weren't given this lullaby. That kind of thinking is more likely to happen if you're thinking outside of the box a little, and I believe that the arts increase one's ability to think out of the box.
Rachel Hammer has similar beliefs about how this creative thinking can play a role in how doctors care for themselves.
I do believe that there is some sort of neurochemical work being done with the humanities that we have yet to fully appreciate. That's kind of a hunch. I can tell that in myself, just like when I exercise, you know, I'm a healthier person when I am exercising my creativity.
So if there's a benefit to incorporating the humanities into medicine, how do we get there? And how do we convince students to take that first step?
A lot of getting students interested in the humanities has to do with the charisma of those who claim to represent it. And so whether or not it succeeds or fails can sometimes, I think, just be a matter of networking and marketing.
Dr. Fox echoes Rachel's take that it takes a charismatic individual to lead the way.
I think we need champions in the field who take it into the hospital somehow, no matter what. People who have the, whatever, chutzpah to do it, get really good results. Their patients love it. Their colleagues come around. It gets incorporated into teaching.
When Dr. Fox was a medical student, the utility of the humanities as a part of medical education hadn't been realized.
And I went into my dean and I asked if I could do a PhD in literature. And he sort of gently but firmly said no. And I accepted it. I'm sorry now that I did.
But there's a lot of work being done these days in medical humanities, both by individuals and through programs supported by medical schools.
I think the climate is very different now. I think that if you have a good idea and you can find someone to back you up, that most places will.
This change is reflected by Rachel's experience in pursuing an MFA in creative nonfiction while still a student at Mayo.
I have to give a shout out to my medical school for making it possible, both financially and just in terms of giving me permission and their blessing to get a degree, you know, in fine arts. I was really blessed to have the approval and the encouragement from my program.
One of Rachel's mentors, Columbia's Rita Sharon, also played an important role in convincing her to pursue writing.
I met with her early on in medical school. We had opportunities to take weeks here and there to do research. And so I was kind of looking for research projects and mentors. And through correspondence with Dr. Sharon, she invited me to come on out to New York and see what she was doing in her master's program. And at that time, I think it was only a year old. So I flew out to New York and spent a week kind of shadowing her and seeing how she applies what she calls narrative medicine in the clinic with her internal medicine patients and also with her home visits, but then also in the classroom. And after spending about a week with her, she looked at me toward the end of the week, kind of when it was time for feedback time, and she said to me, "You know, Rachel, I can tell that your being a writer precedes your being a doctor. And the temporality of those identities for yourself is something that you need to honor and acknowledge."
For Dr. Aronson's part, she engages her students in classes throughout the four-year curriculum that encourage them to develop their writing skills.
So we have a series of classes at UCSF on, you know, sort of doctor or medical student as writer. Because doctors do all kinds of writing. So you read a bunch, you do some writing. There are other courses where you just work on your writing skills. And then in the third and fourth year, we make it a little more pragmatic. Thinking about, is this for the public, or is it for other physicians, or is it for other students? You know, am I aiming for my local paper, for the New York Times, for the New England Journal, for the Journal of the American Geriatric Society? Am I blogging? And really letting people do a little bit of that. And maybe it gets finished and maybe it doesn't, but you're accumulating skills as you go.
Schools like my own Carver College of Medicine are offering more opportunities for students to explore their pre-existing interests in the humanities as part of their medical education, something Dr. Fox feels like she would have appreciated during her time as a student.
The MD with the distinction in the humanities, that just floored me when I found out that your med school was doing that. I just thought, if I could have done that as a student, that would have been heaven for me. That would have been every dream come true, to have some sort of recognition by the medical school. It was a very, very long time before I let my medical world into my poetry world.
Of course, even if a strong humanities program exists in the school, students are hard-pressed to find the time or energy to incorporate another activity into their schedule. So I asked for some advice for medical students who are interested in the humanities.
For me, it was the natural other to science, especially in medicine. And for you, Eric, a time like studying for step one, when it's such just a logical scientific binge, you know, and you're just doing kind of the least humanities-like activity that medicine has, which is taking multiple choice standardized tests, that the humanities can in some ways be a way to vicariously stay connected to the people who will eventually be the recipients and the beneficiaries of all of the work that you're investing over the long trod through academia. It can be the touchstone to remind you about why you're doing what you're doing.
Dr. Aronson believes small tasks can be a touchstone for maintaining your interest and that you have to resist the temptation to compare your achievements in the humanities with those of others.
When I was a resident, one of my co-residents was Rafael Campo, the poet. And he wrote books while we were residents. Like, to me, if I could just, like, get home, jog, eat dinner, have a shower, and go to bed, that was really all I could manage. If you're one of those lucky, incredible people who can do it all, fantastic. Most of us can't, but that's okay, because training is finite, and most people's lives are quite long. You know, so read interesting things, or jot down notes. Even if, you know, if you can not look at the screen, or if you're using a monitor, turn it off, so that you're not trying to make it beautiful, you're just getting down your thoughts and impressions. Just jot some stuff down that you can look at 5 years later, even, is great.
She also reminds us that even the best writers don't have it easy, and that writing is a lot like medicine. It takes repeated practice to develop a refined product.
Look at a great attending. You know, think of the people that totally wow you all the time. Yes, we might assume, you know, he or she has incredible capabilities, but we also know there were years of training. But people look at a finished piece of prose and they say, oh, I could never do that. But you don't know if that article took the person 3 years. You don't know how many colleagues they sent it to. And so I think sometimes people psych themselves out by expecting, like, I'm going to do a draft or two, and then it should look as good as, you know, Atul Gawande's article. Heck no. Even Atul Gawande doesn't do a draft or two, and he's got a whole team of people to help, right? And years of experience. Part of it is also setting realistic expectations. You don't become a good doctor overnight. You don't become a good writer overnight.
Even if you find time to practice, you might find yourself overwhelmed by the options available. Dr. Fox suggests that a focused approach might be best.
If you can only do one thing, pick something that you love, you know, that time stops for, and do it.
An example of that for Rachel Hammer is her newfound interest in baking and blogging.
In the last year of my MFA, I gave myself a New Year's resolution challenge to try to bake a loaf of bread every single day. I was somebody who, before that, had never cooked, ever. The way I kind of kept track of all of the bread and all of the recipes is I started a blog. I would have a recipe, and I would post that on the blog, and then I would kind of have a paragraph before to kind of explain why I chose to make this recipe, or maybe a little bit about the recipe, and then after to review the process and how it tasted. I would often kind of have little tangents about my night call schedule, or I made bagels once during a week where I was on gyne clinic, and so I likened the bagels to cervixes. I know it sounds so gross, but that's what happens when you're a medical student. I had been able to continue my blog all the way through my third year, doing it about every other day, and I find that it is a short assignment. And so just kind of having this quirky angle both toward food and toward writing and toward medicine, I felt like ended up being some entertaining reading for my readers. And they would, you know, support me in comments and whatever kind of feedback you can get in social media, which I think ended up being a buoying force to getting through the wards.
If we could have interviewed physician writers of the past, I think that many of them would have described their passion in the same way. Healthcare professionals today are carrying on the time-honored tradition of working to understand the world at a level deeper than that explained by science. But for all the practical, overarching, and so-called important reasons to integrate these two spheres of our lives, sometimes the only reason anyone needs to do it is because they want to. It's an idea that resonates with Dr. Aronson.
I love it. It helps me make sense and give meaning to the world. And I like being creative and making something out of nothing.
The Short Code is produced by the Writing and Humanities Program at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine with support from Medical Student Government. You can visit us online at theshortcoat.com, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter too, where we post not only our episodes but news and info for medical students. We also take comments and story ideas from you, our listeners, via email at theshortcoats@gmail.com, or leave us a voice message at 347-SHORT-CT. That's 347-746-7828. The producers are Jason T. Lewis and David T. Etler. Our opening music is by Dude Skywalker, and our closing theme music is by RAC. Thanks for listening.
But what I see's a child. Your eyes are glowing red, and your tongue has caught on fire.
Inside Stories is an oral narratives project that catalogs the stories of medical students during their journeys through medical school. The podcast is hosted on In Training, the online magazine for medical students. Visit us at in-training.org/inside-stories. Inside Stories is a founding member of Vocalis, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.